This presentation has been previously broadcast.
The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Some may be inclined to think being Mary's husband must have been easy. She was perfect, no problem. Being married to Mary was not easy. Let's quickly walk through a few moments. First, imagine your fiance tells you she's pregnant and you know for sure it's not yours. Not easy. Second, Bethlehem. Honey, I know you're 9 months pregnant, but you have to ride on this donkey. And by the way, there's nowhere to sleep, so you'll have to have the baby in this barn over there in the feeding trough. Number three, Herod's trying to kill Jesus. So we have to go to Egypt, a foreign land. And four, finally we have to go back to Israel, but we have to go to Nazareth. Nazareth is not good for business if you're a carpenter. So you're gonna be poor your entire life. Oh, and by the way, you can marry Mary, but here's one small caveat. You're going to be a virgin.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Oh, thank that man is you. That's where that audio came from. I thought that was an interesting thing. I want to talk today about St. Joseph. And I'll tell you what, in a minute, I'll open the phones. I'd love to hear about your own experiences with him, too. I've had a devotion to him for a very long time. Of course, my middle name is Joseph. I am Drew Joseph, right? So I've turned to him in recent days, especially in times of difficulty, and he has never failed me. And he is a model. I think he's a hero saint for so many different reasons. For men, he's a wonderful saint for women as well, and he's a provider, a protector, and there's so many different things we can talk about. And today begins a nine-day novena. And I would encourage you to do this. Tonight, I am going to begin a nine-day novena. I've got a special intention I'm going to pray for. And look, this is the year of St. Joseph, right? Let's not forget that. This is the year of St. Joseph, the year that the Holy Father has declared, the year dedicated on December 10th, you know, the Feast of the Immaculate Conception. Pope Francis declares a year dedicated entirely to this silent saint. So if you have a special need, you have a want, you have an intention you're praying for, why not entrust it to St. Joseph? Do it. You know, the husband of Mary, the protector, the provider, put that intention in his hands. Then I'm going to say 9 days in Thanksgiving, whether I see the results of this or not. And I would encourage you to do the same thing. And maybe I'll find a novena I can pop up online for you. You might say, no, I don't know what to pray. There's plenty of novenas to St. Joseph, but find a good nine-day novena that's out there. But there's a very strange history in the church regarding Joseph. And I only came to learn this recently. I didn't realize that this devotion, which is so popular today, is only relatively it's recent in years that he became popular. You would have thought that, you know, in the Middle Ages, the early church, you know, the foster father of Jesus, this heroic figure, as you heard in that audio in the open, all the things that he did and was about, that people would have had devotion to him, just like the Virgin Mary. It was only in 2013, you probably remember this, that the name St. Joseph, the foster father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the husband of Mary, was added to the Eucharistic prayers of the church. You know, a millennia went by, plus two millennia went by, right, in 13 years. So it's like, and then finally, one pope says, hey, you know what, let's add this. I mean, why now is St. Joseph being brought to the fore? Why now? Before that, Pope St. John the 23rd had put his name in the first Eucharistic prayer. I think it was 1962, but he was proclaimed patron of the Universal Church in 1870, and that's all much later in church history. It took 1,200 years before a feast day was even established for him. So if you look at the church fathers, you're going to have a hard time finding his name in the writings. You know, it does pop up, to be fair. It does pop up from time to time. You know, a lot of the stories or legends that we have of him, and they're actually from the apocryphal or the Gnostic sources, you know, like the Proto-Evangelium of James. You often hear Steve Ray and others who've been on this program talk about that. But that somehow or other managed to catch on with her fantastic tales of sprouting lilies and things like that. Maybe it's true. I don't know. I don't want to discount it. It's very likely that could be possible. Look, God can part a sea. He can multiply food. He can turn water to wine. Maybe that story about him and the lily is indeed true. I know Dr. Miravalli had shared that with us as well. But I've decided to invite today a longtime friend of the program. It's been a while since Sandra Meisel joined me. She is a very gifted writer, and she recently wrote an article, and we'll link over to it for you if you want to read it. It's called The Often Silent and Surprising History of Devotion to St. Joseph, and it was run in the Catholic World Report. And when I read this, I thought, what a perfect time. We're 9 days out from the year, from the solemnity. Let me give you a little history on this incredible saint. Sandra, thanks for joining me. It's good to have you back.
Well, I'm happy to be here.
Well, thank you.
And you said you had a lifelong devotion to St. Joseph. Yeah. I have to admit that the things that I'm writing about Joseph, and I've worked through this material several times for Catholic publications. When I was a little girl and I sat on the St. Joseph side of the church, there's his statue, and he's this gray old man dressed in drab olive brown and gray.
Right.
He's not particularly prepossessing. On the other side of the church is a beautiful statue of Mary in a brilliant turquoise gown with a gold filigree crown on her head. I would have liked to have sat on the other side, but I wasn't allowed to. So I'm kind of trying to make it up to the dear saint for my neglect.
I do that with my angel all the time. I've always forget my guardian angel. And I know he's saved me, interceded for me, rescued me more times than I can probably count, but sometimes out of sight, out of mind. But I'm glad you did this as well. You know, let's go back in time. I mean, my devotion has become more intense in recent years. In fact, I remember I was at the Shrine of Our Lady of Good Help. It's a only a church-approved apparition site in the country. And I was doing a live report there one day, and Bishop David Ricken, who was the 12th Bishop of the Diocese of Green Bay, was there, and he didn't see me. I was sitting back in the corner next to my microphone or whatever it was, and I saw him come up to a statue of St. Joseph. He bows his head, puts his hand on the foot, says his very reverent prayer, and goes off. A little bit later, I called him out on it, I think. I must have said something to him about it. And he says, he's always turned to St. Joseph. He found at Wyoming Catholic College. When they need things, he'd always turned to St. Joseph. And I was going through kind of a difficult time at that particular moment. And I had said to Bishop Ricken, could you pray? And he goes, do this, Drew. He says, get a statue of St. Joseph, put it in the front of your home, and put your intentions underneath of it. And St. Joseph will intercede. Turn to him every day and pray. And Sandra, the intercession of this saint was remarkable. It was actually miraculous the way the situations changed and things began to unfold. So it seems like he's growing in popularity. He's coming into the lives of people much more. But when we're giving some of these stats, 1870, you know, 1962, 2013, what was the earliest indication we have in the history of the church? Maybe bring me back even to the early church. What happened to devotion to him? And take us through the timeline, if you would.
There was no devotion to St. Joseph in the early church. The church fathers were only mentioning him in connection with the perpetual virginity of Mary. They were very anxious to show that to the largely pagan ancient world. And he kind of slips through the cracks. You have legends springing up that Evangelium of James has the legend of how he was chosen to be the husband of Mary because he brought his staff to the high priest and the high priest prayed over it and it either sprouted lilies or a dove came out of it and perched on his head, and therefore they knew this was the man to marry Mary. But it makes a big deal about him being very old, a very elderly widow who's about 90 when he marries Mary. And he already has 6 children from his first marriage, and these are the, quote, brethren of the Lord, unquote, who some of whom become apostles. And the Greek side of Christianity in the East kept to that idea. They do not have a separate feast of St. Joseph in the Greek Orthodox Church, to my knowledge. He's celebrated with the ancestors of Christ on the Sunday after Christmas. But they never had a special devotion. They have more devotion to Joseph the patriarch in the Old Testament. So what changes? The earliest expression of devotion to St. Joseph, oddly enough, is by the Copts in Egypt, the Egyptian Christians who by the 8th century had a feast day of St. Joseph. Well, at that point, they're not in communion with Rome, so nobody cares what the Copts are up to. Very gradually, during the Middle Ages, there gets to be a little interest in him because there's more interest in representing scenes from the gospel in art. You begin to have illuminated manuscripts that actively illustrate different episodes and prayer books that have different important events and different feast days illustrated. So there's St. Joseph at the Nativity, and there's St. Joseph at the flight into Egypt. Well, that's nice. But he's always old, and he's vaguely allowed to do a few things. He's looking for a midwife while Mary is in labor, and Jesus is born miraculously while he's out of the cave, so nobody sees it. He's looking for water. He's carrying a light to try and help Mary in the cave at Bethlehem. He's wrapping the newborn infant in his own woolly hose. And, wow. You know, it's almost a little right. Silly. He's made fun of in medieval mystery plays. Right. And the most gratuitous insult, in my opinion, there was a 13th century mystic named Hermann. And he claimed to have visions of the Virgin Mary, where he had a mystical marriage to the Virgin Mary and took the place of Joseph in her affections.
Well,
now, that is just bizarre.
Yeah, bizarre is right.
And, you know, but anyway, by the end of the Middle Ages, there had grown up an interest in spirituality for lay people and married people. And at that point, you're kind of short of married saints. And a French bishop, who was a chancellor of the University of Paris, Jean Gerson, in the early 14th century, wrote an impassioned poem in praise of Saint Joseph. And Gerson was very attuned to the problems of the church in that time. This is in the wake of the Great Western Schism, when we had two popes, and then we had three popes, and nobody knew who the pope was, and the church was just going through convulsions. Society had gone through a lot of convulsions because of the recurring waves of the Black Death, mm-hmm. a lot of wars going on, and this Jean Gerson saw St. Joseph as a protective figure, and he offered him as a model for lay and married Christians. And it caught on because it was a good poem. It wound up being picked up by St. Bernardine of Siena, the great Franciscan preacher in Italy, who was also preaching to people who had a lot of family problems. Believe it or not, Italians in 14th century Italy were actively practicing contraception, and there was a certain amount of polite sodomy in the upper classes. I don't want to hurt your feelings as an Italian.
Yep.
Then this was picked up in Spain and came to the attention of St. Teresa of Avila in the 1540s when she is attempting to reform the Carmelite order. And she begins naming all her reformed convents after St. Joseph. This had never been done before.
Wow.
Then when her Carmelites go into France, they bring the devotion into the French, what they call the Century of Saints. There are a lot of saints in early 17th century France, yep. The most familiar one probably being St. Francis de Sales. And he took to St. Joseph, and he spread devotion to St. Joseph. He had devotion to St. Joseph built into the rule of the Nuns of the Visitation, the order that he founded with St. Jane de Chantal. St. Joseph becomes a model for families. At this point, and this is the Counter-Reformation, they're still trying to re-evangelize France in the 17th
right.
century,
right.
You have an interest in having well-ordered households, and Joseph becomes the model for that. And this is carried on in modern times. 17th century is a great age of Joseph. He's being made a patron of countries. He's being made patron of the Spanish Empire. Devotion to him is taken up in the New World and the Spanish Empire because the poor Indians who have suffered so much because of the Spanish conquest are interested in a protective figure. Huh. And they begin painting a very charming art of St. Joseph. And then in modern times, we have a new set of challenges with industrialization, the breakdown of the family, hostility to the church, particularly in 19th century Europe. And that's the point where Pio Nono, that's Pius the Ninth, St. Pius the Ninth, proclaims Joseph a patron of the church. And now you have the statue of St. Joseph everywhere on the epistle side of the church, and we all used to see it, and we used to write JMJ, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph on our papers. Mm-hmm. And you thought that that had been that way forever, yeah. But it wasn't. Saints essentially emerged, and Joseph is odd because it took 1,500 years for him to emerge, but they emerged to meet the needs of the people at that time.
So what do you make of our time? You know, Pope Francis clearly has, do I have 10 hours for you?
Right? Yeah.
It seems like St. Joseph is really coming to the fore. I mean, there are national conferences that are going on dedicated mm-hmm. to him. I'm part of one of those on March the 19th. Devotion is spreading. There's novenas that are spreading. Statues are being sold to sell houses. I mean, you name it. He's a prominent figure now in the culture. What do you see his role today as? I've never seen him so prominent.
Look at the problems we have in family structures. Yeah. Decline of marriage, right. Contempt for chastity, exaltation of perversions, St. Joseph and hostility to the church, and the church, frankly, mm-hmm. Is in a mess in many areas, yep. In many respects. It needs all the help it can get. And there is Joseph as a helper, a protector, a model for our modern difficulties.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. And I think God gives special graces at special times. And I think St. Joseph's the person to turn to. There's no doubt about it. I love the litany of him. You know, he talks about him being the terror of demons and so much more. Since the late 1800s, he's been invoked as a righteous example of a working man. So many different mm-hmm. titles of him. Sandra, I only have a moment or two left before I have to take my break. Final thoughts on him and where we are right now. So across history, he was forgotten. He's brought to the fore now. His devotion. Is it having an impact right now, devotion to him on the church? How do you see that?
I'm not really in a position to evaluate that, but I will note that newer statues of St. Joseph show him with carpenter's tools. They don't show him with the lilies.
Right, right.
He's also depicted younger. And my parish in central Indiana, which is not overrun with Italians, has a parish St. Joseph table. That would not have been thought of a generation ago. Also, I want to put in a plug for Spanish artists of the 16th and 17th century who did these wonderful, vigorous, handsome, strong, black-haired young Josephs. And if you look up Zurbaran, Murillo, El Greco, just look them up on Google. You will see some lovely and inspiring pictures of St. Joseph as a strong, affectionate caretaker of the Holy Family.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, Sandra, thank you. Thanks for being here. Your article, we are linking over to it. In fact, I think it's up right now. And
thank you.
I hope you get a lot of traction on it. Keep writing for St. Joseph. Time to... to make up for all the time you ignored him, all right?
Yes, yes, yes.
It's called The Often Silent and Surprising History of Devotion to St. Joseph. I'm glad you wrote it. This is his year. I think we're going to see a lot of more attention focused on him. A lot of books have been done. I don't know if you know Mike Aquilina. He's a mm-hmm. gifted apologist and author. He just wrote one on what it was like in the time of Jesus Christ, you know, and what St. Joseph's role was and what that whole environment was like. And Dr. Mark Miravalli, another guest of this program, has written books, you name it. Father Don Colloway, who I think you're probably familiar with, he wrote a 33-day devotion to St. Joseph for consecration, which is just, it has taken the country by storm, the world by storm. So a lot of devotion spreading, no doubt, from the Pope to my own bishop. So lot going on. Let me grab a quick call before I let you go. I don't know if I have time to get it right now. Let me take a quick break. I'll tell you. I'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll grab a couple calls. And I want to hear from you, too. If you want to join us, the number is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. I'll share with you an experience I had with St. Joseph, and I'd love to hear yours. I mean, what a great day to testify to the power of the intercession of this silent saint. He was present in apparitions, Fatima, and Knock. He came silently. And I know many people testify to how they met everything from their spouses to sold their homes to found new jobs to how they grew in holiness. So if you want to testify to St. Joseph, we'll talk about that with you on the other side. The number again, 888-914-9149. Stay with us.
Your voice matters. Call in now at 888-914-9149 to tell Drew what you think. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
We stand for the gospel, we sit for the homily, and now it's time to stand up again for the profession of faith. Hi, this is Father Rocky with our 19th lesson on the Mass. On Sundays, holy days of obligation, and solemnities, the people stand after the homily and make the profession of faith, also known as the creed, because the first word is credo, which means I believe in Latin. Typically, we recite the Nicene Constantinopolitan Creed, which capsulizes the dogmatic formulations of the Council of Nicaea in 325 AD and those of Constantinople in 381. It's commonly called just the Nicene Creed. We stand for the Creed to show respect and attention for what we believe and also to honor all martyrs who died for these beliefs. If you're ever confused about what you believe as a Catholic or if anyone ever asks you what you believe, you can simply recite the Nicene Creed for them.
One of the three pillars of Lent is prayer. So make this your best Lent yet by joining Father Rocky for the Family Rosary Across America every evening at 7 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Then there's other depictions of St. Joseph as a young man, a handsome man, a masculine man, a strong man, who was betrothed to Our Lady. And I'm thinking, well, that makes sense. What beautiful woman is going to marry an old man who's poor? Right? All right. Maybe if he's stinking rich, but, you know, Our Lady was the most beautiful woman ever. And that also tells us St. Joseph, you know, he was ambitious. He wasn't going to settle for anyone. He found, you know, the number one woman in the whole world.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, it's such a delight to hang out with you and take a look at life, especially our faith. Today marks a wonderful day. We're 9 days, well, a 9-day novena begins leading up to the solemnity of St. Joseph. And I would encourage you to pray. We've posted a prayer. In fact, Patrick, my producer, my call screener today, was just saying to me, don't forget Relevant Radio on our mobile app. If you don't have it, download it and share it with others. There is a whole section of prayers there, and there is a 9-day novena to St. Joseph, so you can join Relevant Radio in doing that if you want. I'm joined by Sandra Measle today. She's a very gifted author, has written several books and hundreds of publications, and she did a great piece looking back at the history of St. Joseph. For centuries, he was really a silent saint. He was hidden in the shadows, and it seems that only in recent years has he been brought to the fore. And I see him working in a powerful way. I have a very deep devotion to him. And I'll talk a little bit about that with you. And I'd love to hear your stories, too. I'd love to hear about your devotion and how he's interacted in your life. But, Sandra, let's go to the phones. Let me see. Robert was in first, then we'll take Walt. Let me see. Robert in San Diego. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. And I loved your guest today, Sandra. I had a question, you know, just to get her opinion to see if the resurgence of Joseph, or at least the interest in it, do you think it has anything to do with the the way men are currently treated in society, and husbands and fathers in general, as really being not necessary. But when you look at the life of Joseph, he was exceptionally necessary, you know, for the salvation history. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yes, I think that is one of the trends, the problems that is driving St. Joseph's as a counter force to the insults at fatherhood, the denigration of fatherhood, of masculinity in general. This must be a horrible time to be a male in the Western world. And St. Joseph as a good example of a protective father, a hardworking man who does the will of God and fulfills his part in the history of salvation, which we hope all of us will do.
You know, Robert, I'm glad you called because I never thought of that. I mean, clearly there is an attack on masculinity in our culture today. We see that with this feminization of manhood and the transgender, and we see the breakdown of family and the attack and the mockery that fathers are. I mean, they're vilified on television and made to be comedic figures on sitcoms. And you're so right. I mean, maybe people really want a man to be a man. They want a father to be a father, and St. Joseph fits that model so perfectly. Maybe that's why people are saying, yeah, I'm really drawn to him for some reason. Maybe there is a cultural underpinning. I think it was an interesting observation. I never made that connection. 888-914-9149 if you want to get in. We'll go to Pennsylvania next. Walt is listening to us there. Hi, Walt.
How you doing? I wanted to know, there's a prayer that I've prayed to St. Joseph, and on the holy card it says it was composed in the year 50.
Yeah.
AD 50.
Yeah, I know the one you're talking
and
about.
And I wanted to know if your guest knows if that's accurate or is that just some sort of thing to get people to buy the card.
And Dr. Senator, before you respond, let me just give everybody context on that. There's a little blue book that is out there floating around. It's called the Pietà book. It's a wonderful book. I love this book. It's filled with tons of prayers, right? And one of the most famous prayers in this book is an ancient prayer to St. Joseph. It dates back to 50 AD. And I love the prayer. I pray this prayer. But at the very bottom of it, to Walt's point, this is what it says. There's an old postscript attached to the prayer. It says, this prayer was found in the 50th year of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. In 1505, it was sent from the Pope to Emperor Charles when he was going into battle. And it says, whoever shall read this prayer or hear it or keep it about themselves shall never die a sudden death or be drowned, nor shall poison take effect on them. Neither shall they fall into the hands of the enemy or be burned in any fire or overpowered in battle. Say for 9 days for anything you desire. It's never been known to fail. Now, of course, you always have to submit yourself to God's will. But that was the promise attached to it. And Walt, I'm glad you brought it up. A lot of promises in that Pietà book, a lot of these devotional prayers. So what do you know about this ancient prayer written supposedly just a few years after the death of the Lord?
Well, I hate to say it, but it can't possibly be that old. That would make it older than any book of the New Testament.
Yeah, that's true.
The phrasing of it is very typical medieval Renaissance prayers. Look at the promises of the First Friday devotions, the promises attached to the Carmelite brown scapular.
If I had to guess, I would guess
that it was composed at at the papal court and then sent to the Habsburg emperor, who would have been Charles V, and who did enjoy a number of important military victories and was a very pious emperor. But no, it can't possibly be from 50 AD.
All right. Thank you. Hey, Walt, that was a great call. I appreciate that. And
welcome. God bless you.
God bless you.
Still a good prayer, though.
Thank you.
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. The sentiment is fine.
Right. I pray it every day. In fact, I won't pray it right now, but it's short. It's only a couple sentences involved. I'm not going to not pray it. But a lot of great prayers to St. Joseph. In fact, St. Faustina, if I have time, I'll share with you the encounter she had. St. Joseph actually appeared to her. Gave her a prayer to pray, a prayer to a memorare to St. Joseph, if you will. Before I go to John in New Jersey, let me ask you about something that takes place, and I have a problem with this personally. I mean, a lot of people think that if they buy a statue of St. Joseph, they bury it upside down in their front yard, St. Joseph will help sell their home. Now, there are realtors and there are people who will say right now, Drew, I had my home on the market for 7 months and that home didn't sell. The second I did this, said that prayer, put them in, I can't believe it, the home sold. It happens all the time. Now, the problem I have with this is, you know, burying the statue upside down. It seems very occultish in some respects. My thought is what the bishop said to me. Superstitious is the perfect word. You know, show reverence. I put him in my home, you know, and pray to him there for your intentions. Don't bury him in the ground somewhere. But give me your thoughts on that. How did that practice, you know, arise, and what do you make of it?
Well, I don't know how old the specific thing connected with real estate is, but it's part of a medieval custom. If a saint, excuse me, I'm going to cough. When a saint is urgently needed, you say, if you don't give him my favor, I'm going to turn your picture to the wall. I'm going to put briars around your altar in the church, and then you'll list. There are actually scholarly articles about this, the degradation and insulting of saints to make them grant your favor. And in a very small way, the St. Joseph statue upside down is a reflection of that. No, I don't think it's a good thing to do. And what you said, Drew, just pray to him at home in a proper manner. Okay. I know a very prominent Catholic who did that and sold his home when he didn't expect to, but it's superstitious.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. All right. If you want to join us, 888-914-9149, Mahwah, New Jersey. Sounds like a cool place. Hi, John.
Hi, Drew. Drew, big fan. Love your show.
Thanks.
St. Joseph intervened for my family in a big way on the 12th of February. My father, I was blessed to be by his bedside when he passed away.
Oh, man.
And I emailed you. You came through, too. Yeah. And I put the St. Joseph prayer on the back of his funeral cart. Oh. And it was such a peaceful, beautiful death. Beautiful life, almost 92 years.
Wow,
and,
that's great.
It was beautiful. It was beautiful. Thank you so much.
Well, John, first of all, I'm sorry. To lose a father is a hard thing. I mean, I lost my dad. I know what it was like, and I can tell you're still feeling the pain of that loss, but what a beautiful prayer to put there, and I'm glad you called to share it with us because, Sandra, this brings us back to another title of St. Joseph. He's often known as
the patron of a happy death.
Yeah, so where did that come from?
Because he apparently died at some point before Jesus entered his public life. There's the hidden years, about 18 years. Well, at some point Joseph dies, he would have had Mary and Jesus at his bedside. And there is, in fact, an apocryphal gospel called The History of Joseph the Carpenter, which talks about that Jesus is there holding his hand and blessing him and asking people to respect the memory of St. Joseph. I have a beautiful medal which has Joseph on it as a patron of the happy death. Right. And there are, I think, even religious orders that that's part of their work is to promote Joseph as the patron of deathbeds. Can I tell you a funny story about the Little Sisters of the Poor in St. Joseph?
I'd love to hear it.
Okay. They are very devoted to St. Joseph. Jane Jugan was, and that has been carried forward to the founders. That's been carried forward to today. When the foundress was running the first home of the age that the Little Sisters had, they ran out of butter. And she said, well, put the empty butter container by the statue of St. Joseph. A short while later, someone comes to the door with a tub of butter for them. And this has happened in almost humorous as well as serious ways all through the history of the Little Sisters, 150 years. The funniest story, and I heard this from a nun who was there, who was a participant in it. Their home in Louisville was in the habit of giving the residents donuts with breakfast. And one day, there were no donuts. The company that donated the donuts had had a problem in their bakery, and they weren't going to be able to provide them. And the Mother Superior of the home told this young nun, well, we only have a half a donut from yesterday. Take the half donut and put it by St. Joseph. A few minutes later, a truck from a bakery they had never received donations from pulls in.
I love it.
Loaded with, you guessed it, half donuts.
That's half donuts.
Wow, a whole shipment of half donuts because their machinery malfunctioned and they couldn't sell them, so they were going to give them to the little sisters.
Wow.
And this was firmly impressed on the young nun that you take St. Joseph very seriously.
I love that story. I thought you were going to say, oh, he came with a truckload of donuts, but no, he came with a half donut. So what a confirmation to that. I love that.
Yeah.
Now, you know, his intercession can't be outdone. God's providence can't be outdone, and I love it. All right, we'll go to the phones. We'll take a few more calls. My guest, Sandra Miesel, we're talking about the history behind St. Joseph and his devotion, and really he's come into greater popularity just really in recent years, the first 1,000 years and beyond of the church. He was, I don't want to call him a shadowy figure, but he was a silent saint. You know, the focus was on others. But today, I think God, and we see Pope Francis and others, putting him in those liturgical prayers, and we're seeing devotion spread like never before. Sandra wrote an article on this history, and if you want to learn more about it, go to @DrewMarianiShow, and there'll be a link for her article. It'll take you right there. We just put it up on our Twitter page, @DrewMarianiShow, and you can find it. Let's go back to the phones. Who's up next, Patrick? Lisa, listening in Mission Viejo, California. Hi, Lisa. Good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
Yes, I listen to you guys all the time. You're wonderful. I'm in sales, and I drive in the car, and it's changed my life. I bought the job, which then changed my life. But the radio
changed my life. That's
so
awesome.
It's wonderful. I wanted to ask a question. I was just, I am in home health and hospice, and a lot of my dear patients, I want to give them something. And I was at the store, and there was St. Joseph medals, and somebody was explaining to me that, you know, you can always give St. Joseph medals, but is there a history or something to putting St. Joseph medals around the house? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there is or there isn't.
Mm-hmm. It's a great
so that's my question.
It's a great question. Go ahead, Doctor.
I'm not familiar with that. I know St. Benedict medals you're supposed to put over your doors to the outside.
Right.
But I bet that there is a special prayer to bless a picture or medal of St. Joseph in the old Book of Rituals.
Right. Oh, yeah. Hey, Lisa, my understanding is this. I had taken a trip to Montreal, Canada, and I went to the oratory up there dedicated to St. Joseph, and I came to learn about the devotion St. Andre Bessette had. He'd call himself the lapdog of St. Joseph. And what he would do, he was a Holy Cross brother, he's a 20th century saint, a great saint today. He would take medals, okay, and he would go ahead and he would plant these medals of St. Joseph in the property that he wanted to buy, where the monastery was to be built. And he would go around as he prayed his rosary, did his stations, and he would also toss things, and he'd hand them to people as well. And I know a lot of people have done the same thing. Father Don Calloway, who's a Marian of the Immaculate Conception, wrote a book on St. Joseph. Unlike the statues, he doesn't have a problem with the medals. He says statues, unlike medals, statues should not be buried, especially not upside down. But he didn't have a problem putting these medals in the ground. If you consecrate your property, I actually did it with St. Benedict. When I built my home, Sandra and Lisa, when I moved to Wisconsin, I built a home that my family lived in, and they were pouring the foundation. I put into the foundation St. Benedict and miraculous medals in the foundation of that, so the home had that spiritual protection.
That's nice.
So it's kind of cool.
So
when that home turns to dust someday or somebody's excavating, they're going to find these 1,000 years from now or whenever, a couple hundred years from now at least. So, Lisa, that's my take on it. I think you could go ahead with those medals and put them around the place, but I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Again, it's all rooted in devotion. You know, it's all rooted in turning to God. These are sacramentals, you know, it's all asking God for his grace and his intervention in this. But we do have these great spiritual armors or spiritual weapons, if you will. All right. So let me do this. Sandra, stay with me. We'll take a break. When we come back, Patrick in Chicago, you are on deck. He's got a question for you about the life of St. Joseph. I've got a few minutes left. If you want to join us too, as I'm saying, phones are open for you and you can dial in anytime. It's 888 888- 914-9149. Ask your questions. Share your stories. Has St. Joseph intervened for you in a powerful way? How did you come to know of him? Maybe you're just now hearing about him, too. Love to talk with you. We're back with more right after this.
Did you like what Drew and the guest had to say? Get caught up on this conversation and all the others by going to the Relevant Radio archives. Just search for The Drew Mariani Show.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The powerful intercession of St. Joseph was just not for yesteryear, and the powerful intercession of the, quote, miracle man of Montreal, Blessed André Bessette, also was not just for the time of his life. The miracles continue, and we too are called to receive all the graces that heaven offers, including if heaven desires miracles for us, so be it. That's part of heaven being at our disposal.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That was a very gifted and noted theologian, Dr. Mark Miravalli, a great contributor to this program. He wrote a book also on St. Joseph, too, if you ever want to pick it up. I think it's Meet Your Spiritual Father. It's a companion to a book he wrote called Meet Your Spiritual Mother regarding Our Lady. So great insight into the story. I'm joined by Sandra Measel today. We'll take a few more calls. If you're just joining us, we're taking a look at the unknown history of St. Joseph. You know, I and this was new to me. I thought I knew St. Joseph because I always had my father's name is Joseph. His father's name was Joseph. My middle name is Joseph, right? My mother and father, we always had devotion to St. Joseph. I prayed to him more than ever in recent years, and I see his prominence today. But it has not always been like that in the church. It's only been relatively recent that the church has been pressing forward on devotion to him. It wasn't until 1870 that Pius IX declared Joseph to be the patron of the universal church. And since then, what do we see? Numerous devotions, accolades of St. Joseph. They've come, and we are still learning more about him. And just consider who he was for a moment. I mean, he was an extraordinary man. And his role in the salvation story, the role of salvation history, you know, he had to bring the Savior, the Prince of Peace, into the world. You know, it was a very difficult time. He was charged with a very daunting task. And his virtue guided him. If it wasn't for his humility, would he have accepted, you know, Mary? Would he have given up everything to protect an infant? You know, was he not a seer himself? I mean, he was granted these incredible dreams, indicating that they should go on this journey in order to avoid the persecution that was coming. I mean, this is a major saint. I mean, far larger than just the saint that we go to when we want to sell a house, right? And I can attest to that personally. So those who honor him are promised really an escort into heaven. And he comes under many titles. One of my favorites is Terror of Demons. You know, one of my colleagues here at the network just sent me an email. They're listening to the program. And he says, you know, I just love what I'm hearing. He says, this is such a great guest. And I never knew that St. Joseph was known as patron of a happy death. Yeah. Turn to him in those final hours. So much to talk about. Sandra, let's go to the phones. We'll tap into your genius once again. Patrick is listening in Chicago. He's got a question for you. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, Drew. Hi, Sandra. I just had a question. I was considering reading this book I had. It's called The Life of St. Joseph, and it was by Maria Cecilia Beige.
Biage.
Abbess of Benedictine Convent of St. Peter in Monfalcone, Italy, from 1743 to 1766.
Yeah.
And I was wondering what you thought about that.
Okay. Sandra, well, are you familiar with the book? I think she's the real deal, right?
Okay. I only heard about this because someone posted to the comments on my article. That Drew was saying, the article ran in Catholic World Report website, and somebody mentioned that book. That is the first time I have heard of it. Any of these apparition books, and does the book have an imprimatur? That's the first thing you want to look at. But the apparition books are very pious, and there are people who get a lot of useful spiritual insights out of them, but they don't really have any official standing.
Yeah.
But on another note, I was looking through. I have a copy of the Rituale Romanorum, pre-Vatican II, and they have a special blessing for a chaplet of St. Joseph and a ring of St. Joseph, which are apparently things promoted by the Carmelite order.
Well, that's awesome. So where can people get that? I'm sure many people are saying, hey, I want that.
I think you might want to ask, do you have any Carmelites that you have on your program? Maybe they know something about it, but... here it says, benediction for the crown of St. Joseph,
beautiful,
proper to the order of Mount Carmel. Yep. And it invokes him against the eruption of enemies. And we consecrate ourselves to his clemency, to his honor. He was a protector. He's the spouse. He is a man of good speech, etc. Anyway, I wouldn't have looked at that if we weren't on this show now.
Awesome. Well, there you go. Providence at work. Hey, Patrick, thank you. I know there's a lot of these mystics who've had these experiences. Maria of Agreda, I think she wrote City of God, didn't she? Or no, it's Catherine Emmerich wrote City. No, Agreda wrote City of God, right?
Yes, she did.
And then you have Emmerich, who wrote, who Gibson actually based the movie The Passion on. And so many of these were given these visions of the next life. In fact, let me go to Pat. She's listening in Wisconsin. She might even have that question. Okay. Pat, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, Drew. In regard to the age of St. Joseph when he died, in regard to the Piata saying 50 A.D., we know with the City of God, Mary of Agreda, that Jesus and our Blessed Mother was with St. Joseph when he died.
Right.
So it could have very well be, and she died when she was around 80.
Right.
So, and our Lord was still alive, but Joseph was older than our Blessed Mother.
Right.
But
Pat, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but in 50 A.D., Christ was already dead. He died in 33 A.D., supposedly, right? Based on, after Christ starting at the year zero. Question, when Christ was born, but I don't want to go down that path. Fundamentally, 33 A.D. So what the Pietà was saying, that's when that prayer was written. But you bring up a great point. Pat, I only have a minute left, so I don't mean to cut you off, but I want to get Gloria, because she is listening in Queens, New York. She's been holding a long time, and she claims that St. Joseph helped her in a car accident. Gloria, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much. My experience, I had an accident, a car accident, and I hit an older man. And I went to church. I was crying desperately because I thought, he had died. They took him to the hospital, and a lady came to me with a prayer of St. Joseph, and she said, pray, and it never fails. And I prayed. And then they told me that the man was fine, and I became a devotee to St. Joseph since that. And then I heard you, Drew, saying that you pray the memorary every day to St. Joseph.
Yep.
And after that, you prayed Our Father, Hail Mary, and Glory to Be every day. Right. And I started to do that every single day, and especially on Wednesdays. So I love him so much. And he had never failed in my job when I had problems with coworkers, people doing, giving me a very hard time. I always prayed to him.
Well, I'm delighted to do that. Yeah, the reason I did that, I learned that from St. Faustina. She had visions not only of the resurrected Lord, Our Lady appeared to her, the angels, her guardian angel would appear to her, but so did St. Joseph. And St. Joseph, one time she was having a difficulty, and he suggested that prayer to her. He says, pray the mercy, the Sisters of Mercy, which Sister Faustina was part of, would pray that memorare to St. Joseph. And he asked her to recite that every day along with that Our Father, Hail Mary, and Glory Be. So I kind of add that to the prayers that I pray every morning when I turn to St. Joseph. It's just some of the ones that I turn to. But I would encourage others to do it. I'll talk more about that maybe tomorrow. Maybe we can share a little bit more about St. Joseph and some of these great prayers of St. Faustine and others. But Sandra, I am out of time for the day in the broadcast. I want to thank you for being here.
Okay.
If people want to track you down or they want to read your work, what's the best way to connect?
Google my name. I have a Wikipedia page. But if you Google my name, you will see links to recent articles.
Great.
Including this one on St. Joseph, I'm sure.
And Sandra Miesel is spelled,
M-I-E-S-E-L. It rhymes with diesel. It's like diesel with an M.
I love it. All right, Sandra, always good to have you here. It's great to catch up. It's been too long. We'll do it again,
yes,
okay?
Thank you. Thanks.
Have a great day. That's Sandra Miesel. You check out her article, too, that she wrote on the extraordinary history of St. Joseph. It's at our Facebook, our Twitter account, at Drew Mariani Show. Follow us there. Follow me at mine, at Drew Mariani as well. And stay tuned for Kale. He's coming up. Always a fun, interesting, and entertaining show. I'll be back again tomorrow to give you a look at life you won't find anywhere else. So until our paths get crossed, count on my prayers. Remember, God loves you. So do I. Have a good day.